America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jummah Mubarak, whatever it may be for you. It's the beginning of the weekend, and welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Normally in our first hour, we have Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment today. Bernie's on an airplane at this very moment. In fact, up until about an hour ago, we thought that he might be able to do the show. He thought he would be able to do the show by telephone from the airplane. And it's not working out. So Bernie sends his apologies and says, hey to everybody, happy Friday. And he'll be back next week. And right now, we were going to have Ravi Batra on the program as soon as possible in any case. And this is a perfect time, I think, particularly given the headlines in today's Financial Times, the headlines in today's Wall Street Journal, what's going on all around the world. For a million questions, Ravi Batra is with us, and the economist, RaviBatra.com, his website, a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, the author of 5 international bestsellers, 2 of them New York Times bestsellers, and a great guy, and my favorite of his books, of course, Greenspan's Fraud. Ravi Batra, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. And we'll also, after you and I talk, we'll be taking calls and throughout the day, the rest of the day, anything goes. Friday, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com and airamerica.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Ravi, the question that I have a bunch of questions for you, but the top one, the one that I think most people don't understand, and perhaps I understand it well and perhaps I understand it very imperfectly, is inflation is when you have more dollars chasing fewer or the same number of goods and services, and so the value of the dollar decreases. Why then would it be, it seems counterintuitive, that reducing interest rates, which is what the Fed just did, is going to cause inflation? It's going to cause ultimately interest rates to go up, because typically inflation seems to be associated with higher interest rates. I remember back, you know, the first house that Louise and I bought, I think we paid a 13-14% mortgage on it. It was back in the late 70s, as I recall, when interest rates were so high. What's the relationship here between what the Fed did yesterday and inflation, and how does that, you know, what does that mean, and how does that affect us all?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned two things. One was that book, Greenspan's Fraud. I've been listening to Greenspan lately, and he has been talking about principles. Remember that immediately I thought of a man who committed fraud is talking about principles.
Oh, I know. It's in fact, we're going to be talking to him on Monday, and I intend to. Your book is the primer for that. And everybody should, you know, everybody should run out and get a copy of Ravi Batra's book, Greenspan's Fraud. I know you have a more recent book as well, but
I have a more recent book. In that recent book, I have tackled this question you raised about inflation. Mm-hmm. Inflation, which is so surprising, in the United States has been following an exact cycle. A cycle that can go back as far back as 2 centuries. It so happens that inflation has peaked every third decade in the United States over the past 2 centuries. Like the last peak decade, which you just talked about, was the 1970s. Prior to that, it was the 1940s. Before that, it was the 1910s. And on it goes back into more than 2 centuries. So it should not be a surprise now that we are, as far as the cycle is concerned, we are committing the same errors that we did made in the 1970s.
Is this the consequence of some arbitrary cycle? I mean, does it have to do with the moon or something? I mean, why would we have a 30-year cycle?
I think each generation tends to last about 30 years.
And yeah, typically a generation is 20 years. So you're saying each generation is forgetting the lessons that their parents learned?
The previous generation, that's right. They forget the lessons, and, you know, it's very easy to print money whenever there's a problem, and that's what Ben Bernanke is doing, the same thing now. He's trying to print money to solve the problem of the housing crisis. But it doesn't work, as you said yourself. In the end, when you print a lot of money, inflation comes back and interest rates skyrocket. But let me continue with this line of thought. In the 1970s, inflation showed up in three or four forms. One form was the high price of oil. The other was the sharply rising prices, home prices. The third was the commodity prices went up sharply, including gold, etc. And the CPI, of course, as you mentioned, 13-14% inflation rates occurred towards the end of the 1970s. Now, in the same way, look at this decade, three decades from the 1970s, oil is extremely high. It's breaking records again. Gold commodities are sharply rising, including gold. And then housing, home prices have risen very sharply. That's home inflation. The CPI has risen also from the previous decade, although it's not as bad as it was in the 1970s, mostly because of China's imports from China. But again, the decade of the 2000s is very similar to the decade of the 1970s, which shows that this three-decade cycle of inflation can be used to make a variety of forecasts, and that's what I've done in my new book. In fact, I had already predicted that this decade would see a major rise in the price of oil, home prices, gold, and CPI, and so on. But this is a cycle. Cycle means when things go up sharply, they also crash. So my forecast in the new book, which let me give you the title, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos, I'm predicting an economic chaos which will then bring down the home prices, oil prices, gold, etc. after this decade ends. Home right. prices are already beginning to have become flat and beginning to fall.
So at some point in the next few years, if you're invested in commodities like gold and oil, sell. But
that's right.
Convert it into cash.
That's right. I would start selling, getting out of the stock market right now. The market is very high, and pretty soon we are going to see this housing crisis spread because of and it's going to lead to economic chaos.
And commodities, I mean, wheat is high right now. It just hit an all-time high. Gold is over $720.
That's right.
Oil over $82 a barrel. When do you see, I mean, this increase in the price of commodities is a function of the actual decrease of the value of the dollar. Back in 1910, you could buy a men's suit with an ounce of gold. Back in 1800, you could buy a man's suit with an ounce of gold. And today, you can buy a man's suit with an ounce of gold. So really, in some ways, it's a function of the decrease of the value of the dollar. But there's also those cycles. So is there, within this year or within the next 5 years or within the next 10 years, do you think the commodities are going to crash? I mean, and isn't that what a depression is all about, when commodities crash?
Yeah, this is mid-2007, so I think in about 3 to 4 years, the commodities will start crashing. All the home prices they've already started to fall, and they will slowly keep falling, but towards the end of this decade, they'll crash.
Yeah, so to my original question, my understanding is that the reason why decreasing interest rates will ultimately cause inflation, which down the road will lead to an increase in interest rates, is that decreasing the prime rate, the rate at which the Fed is loaning money to banks, what this does is it makes, frankly, more money available. I mean, this is just a fancy way of printing cash, and by making more money available over the short term, it stimulates the economy, but over the long term, it decreases the value of the money because there's more money relative to the same amount of goods and services. And therefore, down the road, 6 months, a year down the road, maybe after the next elections, this is the Republicans trying to buy time, who knows, then they're going to have to jack up that prime rate and tighten credit in order to prevent something like the German hyperinflation. Do I have that right?
You certainly have it right. There is an additional factor also. There are two reasons why this cut in the interest rate could be very inflationary. One, you just mentioned, you have more dollars chasing the same number or the fewer amount of goods. The second is the fall in the foreign exchange value of the dollar. The dollar is falling now with respect to the euro, to the pound, with respect to the yen and the Chinese yuan. So the dollar is falling with respect to many foreign currencies, And we import so much now. I mean, we're so much dependent on foreign goods. They're all going to become expensive. And the third thing, which is also spooky, now when the dollar falls, the oil goes up by itself. That's another problem.
Well, the Gulf states are not idiots. I mean, they know what's going on. Robbie, can you stick around over the break and continue this conversation? Because I would like to get into the international repercussions of this. Particularly, Saudi Arabia has always pegged the riyal to the dollar, and now it looks like maybe they're starting to decouple. What might that mean for us? It's 16 minutes past the hour. We're talking to Ravi Batra, the economist and author. RaviBatra.com is website. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman with you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Fun here, doing progressive talk radio. Tom Hartman with you on Air America Radio. We're talking with Ravi Batra, the renowned economist, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, the author of 5 international bestsellers, 2 New York Times bestsellers, his new book, The New Golden Age. My favorite of his books, Greenspan's Fraud. And certainly, if you are listening to Mr. Greenspan these days, you need to run out and get Ravi Batra's book, Greenspan's Fraud, to put Mr. Greenspan in context. We're talking about inflation and the economy. This is critical stuff. And Ravi will be taking your calls after the bottom of the hour as well. 866-303-2270 if you've got a specific question for him. Ravi, or Professor Batra.
Robbie's fine.
Thank you. I'm looking at these headlines here. The Financial Times, crude oil jumps above 84. Here's another one. Fears of dollar collapse as Saudis take fright. That the Saudis are not dropping their interest rates the way that we are, even though they've pegged the riyal to the dollar since 1968 or 64, something like that. Canada's dollar has now equaled parity with the United States. A Canadian dollar is equal to a U.S. dollar. Around the world, what's happening, and I just came back last weekend. I was in Germany, and, you know, it costs $5 to get a glass of tap water nowadays. I mean, it's incredible. And for an American traveling overseas, it's quite obvious how we are being impoverished relative to the rest of the world. But I think most Americans don't understand what it means that the euro is now, you know, it takes a $1.40 to buy a euro, whereas I remember when I could go to Europe and I could buy a euro for 83 cents. What that is going to mean for us here in America, what's the consequence of that?
Well, first of all, coming back to that cycle I was talking about, the cycle of inflation, the fact that inflation has been occurring every 3 decades in the United States at a high level. If you look at the late 70s, about 1978, inflation was around 7-8% per year, CPI. But housing inflation was strong and oil inflation was strong. But then, in the late 70s, oil jumped even faster and inflation picked up even more. And that reminds me of what Mr. Bernanke has done about 2 days ago. He cut interest rates sharply, and we were doing the same thing in the 70s to stimulate our economy. In the end, there was very high inflation. Today, because of the globalization, inflation doesn't affect us in the same way, but new things have cropped up, like you just mentioned, the Saudi Arabia not pegging its or Saudi Arabia not reducing its own interest rate, which means that they perhaps are thinking about decoupling their currency,
which could be a disaster for the dollar, couldn't it?
Because the
main reason that the dollar is the international medium of exchange is because the Saudis, the largest supplier of oil in the world, peg the dollar to their currency, and so basically they take dollars for oil. And if they stop taking dollars for oil and start taking riyals for oil, we're in big trouble. I mean, that's what Saddam Hussein threatened to do, and we bombed him.
Well, I hope George Bush doesn't bomb Saudi Arabia, although he's capable of doing anything, really.
Yeah. But doesn't this ultimately mean, you know, when the dollar becomes worth less relative to other currencies around the world, it is the impoverishment of the United States, isn't it?
Oh, certainly it's the impoverishment of the United States. But as long as U.S. wages keep rising or keep up with the rising price of the dollar at home, it's okay. And that was...
But they're not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In the 70s, somehow the U.S. wages were rising almost as fast as the rising prices.
Well, that's because in the 70s you had 28% of all workers members of unions, and
exactly.
They were raising hell.
Right.
Now it's
exactly.
7% of workers.
We had a very high level of manufacturing. We did not have so much outsourcing and so much free trade. So now all those other things combined means the very fast increase in poverty in the United States, and that's precisely, you know, we mentioned the book, The New Golden Age. That's precisely what I've mentioned in that. That poverty is going to rise even at a faster pace pretty soon because of inflation, because of layoffs, and even the stock markets will not be able to stand the big inflationary picture which is coming up. So I think we need to prepare ourselves over the next 2-3 years to face this huge economic chaos that's coming up.
Yeah, prepare ourselves, the average person, by getting, what, debt-free?
Well, there are a variety of things that we can do. First of all, the simplest thing that comes to mind right away is that we should save as much money as we can now while we still have a job.
Right.
In about a year or two, we may not have the job. Jobs are going to fall. Unemployment is going to rise. And stock market is still pretty healthy, but I don't think the stock market can withstand all these negatives. It's going to fall sharply.
Yeah, although, you know, so much of the stock market is now international. You know, General Electric does more than half its business outside the United States. Is it still a U.S. company? But that's a whole other topic. We're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, the author of a number of bestsellers, RaviBatra.com. He'll be taking your questions right after the break, and we'll continue this conversation right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And also, what will the Democrats, if they get elected, mean for this?
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. On Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Ravi Batra, RaviBatra.com, his website. He's a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, the author of 5 international bestsellers, 2 New York Times bestsellers, including Greenspan's Fraud and The New Golden Age, his two most recent books, and excellent they are. And Ravi, we've got a bunch of people with questions for you. First, I just have one question I'd like you to get into a little bit, and then we'll take our calls. What impact do you think it will have on the economy if a Democrat is elected president and if the Democrats continue to control the House and Senate, in fact, if they get a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate in the elections of 2008?
Well, the main reason that the fundamental problem in the economy is this. Productivity is rising too fast, and wages are not keeping up with that productivity. Wages are, in fact, falling. And if you recall, we talked about this last time we were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Productivity is rising too fast, which means that supply is rising and demand is not. To keep the demand match the supply, the government has been creating new debt, and this is what Mr. Bernanke did also. He created new debt by lowering interest rate or by printing more money. When the Democrats take over, they would, I think, increase the minimum wage maybe even at a faster pace. That will be a natural rise in demand. You don't need debt. When wages go up, demand rises in a natural way. You don't need to create new debt to raise demand to the level of supply.
In other words, the Democrats would probably abandon supply-side economics and go with demand-side economics, which is the traditional way that economies work.
That's right, exactly. So that would be a solution to the problem. If they can follow these demand-side policies, then you would not need another creation, another dose of debt to sustain the economy. That would be good for the country if they can follow up on what they promised.
Yeah, so they would have to go back to raising marginal tax rates, the highest marginal tax rates, for example, on millionaires and billionaires in order to balance the budget and re-empower labor, frankly.
Well, let me give you some shocking information. In the 1950s and the 1960s, we had the highest GDP growth rate in the United States, and the living standard went up at the fastest pace in those two decades. And guess what the top marginal income tax rate was?
91%.
That's right, 91%. And the supply side economics is a total fraud. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well said. Ravi Batra is our guest. 1-866-303-2270. Our telephone numbers. Chuck in Carlsbad, California. You're on with Ravi.
Yeah, Dr. Ravi. I used to follow Dr. King, who is a historical economist. And like you, he predicted cyclic depression. And he said when he predicted one in the late 70s, early 80s, he said when you skipped one, the next one is a real butt kicker. And also, I was wondering if a Democrat gets in and brings the jobs back to this country and puts maybe some tariffs in or something to protect them, what kind of effect will that have on the whole depressionary cycle?
Well,
good question.
When the Democrats come back, I have a feeling that there will be some improvement, but not a very strong improvement, because even the Democrats accept a lot of money from corporate contributions, and they perhaps will not be able to follow too many policies that reduce the influence of big business. So they would improve the economy slightly, but it might be too little too late. And so I think economic chaos that I'm predicting is still going to come. There will be stock market crashes, rising unemployment, rising poverty. The Democrats
and the Republicans will blame the Democrats for all this, right?
That's right. The Republicans, especially Greenspan, has messed up the economy so badly that the Democrats would not be able to solve it unless they really go after, they really create demand-side policies. Because
right, and start talking like Teddy Roosevelt again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's really what they need to do. John in Santa Monica, California, you're on with Professor Ravi Batra.
Hello, Tom, and it's truly an honor to speak with you, Dr. Batra. I just want to say that Greenspan's Fraud is absolutely the seminal book to understand how we got to where we are today. I have two questions, one general. Given the fact that the Fed drastically reduced rates by 50 basis points, do you think that the foreign investment in the United States will in turn force interest rates up so that we can continue to float our debt, and might that lead to hyperinflation?
Well, that's the danger that Tom Hartman was mentioning, that now that Saudi Arabia is not cutting its own interest rate and dollar is falling, foreigners may start leaving American assets, and then interest rates will rise sharply and could really hurt our economy. Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. You're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. I listened to Terry Gross interview Greenspan recently, and a couple things struck me. One, he said that the percentage of GDP spent on war making was small compared to the same percentage during the Korean War, and I think you can answer that by what you just said about during the 50s. And two, however, we are spending too much on Medicare. And the GDP seemed to be the only indicator with which he was enamored, and I think it's silly for a bunch of reasons, and I only took macro, micro, and international econ in college. So can you address this kind of economic charlatanry? And I'll listen to you off air.
Great question, Bonnie. You know, in Bhutan, Ravi, they have a gross happiness indicator rather than a gross domestic product. they measure quality of life, and that's I thought that was interesting.
What matters more to the economy is not the GDP figure, because that's highly aggregated and includes the incredibly high salaries of the CEOs, you know, making $50 million a year, $100 million a year. So that's not a good indicator of the state of the economy. what's better is the state of what's happening to the real wage of what's known as the production worker.
They are the state of labor.
That's right. They are the 80% of the labor force. What's happening to their real wage? And that real wage has been falling while productivity is going up. So obviously there is a disconnect now. Increasing productivity increases supply, but falling real wage does not lead to rise in demand. So they have to create new debt by cutting interest rates. But that remedy can work only for a while because you cannot increase debt forever. And now the problem is that we can't raise debt forever. Foreigners may be leaving the United States soon.
And it may blow up in our face. And what's so amazing is that back, you know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, most newspapers had labor sections, and they talked about the state of labor every single day, and there were measurements of the state of labor, and the average wage in the United States was a number that was widely known, and people watched that. And now I don't think anybody even knows what the average median or average wage is in the United States. Instead, we're all looking at the Dow, which is just a lousy indicator of anything. Chris in Toronto, Canada, you're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hi there. I was just wondering how satellite countries such as Canada, Mexico, and India would be affected by a commodities dip that you predicted, since Canada tends to be weighted towards the commodities, Mexico and India towards the services. How would they be affected, and how could they mitigate the oncoming disaster?
Well,
yeah, large chunk of Canada's GDP is the export of oil and wood, and Mexico's major source of income is the export of oil.
Yeah, this would be a worldwide disaster. This is economic chaos that's going to come all over the world, and that's why I'm predicting. But the end result is the new golden age. See, the title of the book is The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. Economic chaos is only one part of this scenario I'm predicting, but then people are going to be so fed up in the United States, they would overthrow the rule of money in society. Then there would be golden age, and that would be great for the whole world.
This is exactly what happened in 1901 when Teddy Roosevelt became president and started his war against the robber barons. And you know, after the hyperinflation of the 1880s and 1890s, and this is exactly what happened when Franklin Roosevelt became president in 1932.
Right.
Yeah, so
the New Deal of the 1930s was essentially the golden age would be similar to the New Deal of the 1930s. And then we had a very strong economy for many, many years in which the living standard was rising for everybody, not just a few people as today.
No, the New Deal lasted right up until Reagan declared the end of it and actually began the end of it. And now you've got conservatives running around bragging about
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
So there you have it right from Limbaugh's mouth. Rich in Birmingham, Alabama, we got about a minute before we've got to take a break. You have a question for Dr. Ravi Batra.
Sure. It seems that there are two trends going on in the housing market. One, we've got the 107 million baby boomers that are entering retirement age. That's going to increase the supply side of the housing market. And at the same time, we have a shrinking middle class, so the pool of people available to buy homes is shrinking. Won't this drive the price of homes down and leave a lot of people upside down in their homes? Thank you.
Yes, the house prices will fall. In fact, this is part of the three-decade cycle I mentioned. The home prices also went up sharply in the 70s, and then they began to fall towards the end of the 70s, but in the early 80s, they crashed. So same scenario I'm expecting now. House prices have basically stabilized now. They're going to fall a little, but then after this decade, they're going to crash because of rising interest rates or because of many other things, maybe rising price of oil.
So that would be a good time to either have your house completely paid off or to sell it and rent through the rough times.
That's right.
Interesting. 45 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra. RaviBatra.com, his website. We'll be taking your calls for him the last 15 minutes of the hour here. So stick around. We'll be right back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program on AirAmerica.com, or on Air America, AirAmerica.com, TomHartman.com, 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
just as long as you stand by me.
And don't be afraid. This is a really important message. We don't need to be afraid of these terrorists out there and shred our Constitution. And we don't need to be afraid of coming economic changes. Things come and go. It's just about getting informed and prepared. And to that end, we're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra, professor of economics at SMU, author of Greenspan's Fraud, The Coming Golden Age, and many other books. RaviBatra.com is website. And, Ravi, let's take a few more phone calls here, if you're up for that.
Okay.
Okay, Rich in Stratford, Connecticut. You're on the air with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Yes, I'm calling to ask them about what will happen if the countries we've been touting as bad countries, the Middle East and China, who the Pentagon always says are justifications for all their weapons, decide not to buy the bonds that we need them to buy every year. China is the biggest purchaser of our debt each year, yet the Pentagon calls them the justification for multi-billion dollar weapon systems.
Well, the foreign countries that are buying bonds from us are doing it in their self-interest because they want to keep the value of the dollar high, and so they keep exporting to us. They're doing it in self-interest, and that self-interest won't go away. As far as foreign governments are concerned. But foreign individuals who also invest billions in the United States, they have no such self-interest. They are not looking at from the viewpoint of their own country. They are looking at it from their own viewpoint of their own profit. So foreign governments will not leave U.S. assets, but foreign individuals will, and that also is a huge amount. I mean, America borrows so much, so that itself will also will cause a collapse of the dollar.
So the foreign governments will continue buying because they want the dollar to be strong, so that we will still be able to buy their exports. And in fact, as the dollar falls, that's actually going to improve our ability to sell exports, because our exports become cheaper, and it's going to make it more expensive for us to bring in imports. That's something that the other governments of the world don't like.
That's
but
right.
The individuals of the world, they're just going to say, hey, why are we buying dollars,
exactly,
dollar-denominated debt, when the dollar's falling through the floor?
Exactly.
Okay, good point. And makes perfect sense. John in Hoboken, New Jersey, you're live with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. I'm a long-time listener. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
I've actually got a two-part question for Dr. Batra. The first is, Dr. Batra, do you see gold at $1,000, $2,000, even $3,000 an ounce in the next couple of years, and a similar spike in silver?
I'm not going to make such calls, but I think gold will keep rising. It certainly will, most likely will go past $1,000, could go up to $1,500, but I think it will keep rising. More than that, you can't say. It all depends on what happens in the early 2010s. But until then, it sure will keep rising.
Okay. Mark in Portland, Oregon, you're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm very committed to alternative economics, to demand-side economics, and to the vision of working less and living longer.
French.
I have two questions. Number one, the $1 trillion tax cuts to those who didn't need help. How can Greenspan promote that and now in his memoirs criticize it? The second point, private investors lost an incredible amount of money, I think, in July and August, and they are currently divesting, which creates a tremendous problem for the dollar. Paul Krugman said the great unraveling provokes the great refusal. I think that's a good perspective as we try to move from trickle-down mythology to real alternative economics.
Or historic classic economics. Dr. Batra.
Well, see, Greenspan is now blaming Republicans for not following the principles. And to counter that, I'm talking about my own book, the Greenspan book called Greenspan's Fraud. Greenspan has committed so many follies, he has created so many problems for us and the world economy that he certainly is not a man of principle himself. So What else can I say about it, about Greenspan?
Yeah, we shouldn't be surprised that he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Exactly. Tim in Santa Fe, New Mexico, you're on with Dr. Ravi Batra. Tim?
San Jose.
In Santa Fe, yeah, I'm sorry.
I have a question. I'm trying to figure out, and maybe your guest can answer it. Was the subprime thing deliberate? I saw him being interviewed on the NewsHour, and he seemed to suggest that that debt is a good thing, that having surpluses is a bad thing.
Yeah, we have about 30 seconds left. In summary, I guess the question is: was this deregulation of the mortgage lending industry that led to these subprime mortgages? Was that a deliberate attempt to screw things up, or was this just ideology trumping common sense?
No, there was no other way out, because when productivity is ahead of wages, the only way you can stabilize the economy is by creating new debt. He had no other choice.
So they had to do a Ponzi scheme, or else they had to raise taxes, and they were unwilling to raise taxes, so they did a Ponzi scheme on us, on homeowners.
Exactly. There was no other way out for them. So Greenspan's fraud is real fraud on the whole world economy.
Amazing. Yeah, it all falls into place. And therefore, now it's going to have to unwind and work its way out after 26 years of these insane neoliberal policies. Incredible. Dr. Ravi Batra, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Great talking with you. RaviBatra.com, his website, his books, Greenspan's Fraud, and the Coming Golden Age, the New Golden Age, among others. Check it out. We'll be back with your calls. It's Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman with you.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Dan Rather is suing CBS News now for $70 million. And I see, frankly, a relationship between this, the vote that was taken yesterday to condemn MoveOn.org, and the Democrats who wimped out on it, tragically, and the last question that was asked yesterday at the presidential news conference, when George Bush had the opportunity to take a shot at which he did at MoveOn.org after he's, you know, basically blithered about the economy and declared Nelson Mandela dead, nonetheless. I guess it's not funny, but it's tragic. But nonetheless, I think that there, you tie these things together. First of all, Dan Rather on the Larry King Live program on CNN's Larry King Live yesterday, he said somebody sometime has got to take a stand and say democracy cannot survive, much less thrive, with the level of big corporate and big government interference and intimidation in news. And what this goes back to is not the fairness doctrine. What this goes back to is two simple and foundational principles. The first being programming in the public interest. The idea that the public airwaves, and to some extent even the print media, as long as we're going to continue a special fourth class rate for newspapers, and I mean we no longer subsidize the production of newsprint in the United States like we did the first 50 years of this country, but it's always been considered part of it's the fourth estate, a semi-official fourth branch of government. The press is the only industry that is singled out in the Constitution for special protection. The Constitution doesn't say the government will protect the arms industry. It doesn't say the government will protect the buggy whip industry. It doesn't say the government will protect the housing industry. But it does say that the press will be protected from interference by the government. A free press being essential to democracy. I mean, they not only protected the press, they even said why. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free speech thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. I mean, it's just very, very straightforward. And so Dan Rather's saying, basically, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but the essence of, I think, his complaint or the issue could be tracked back, for example, to this flight that was made from Atlanta to Washington, D.C. in early 2001 after George W. Bush was appointed president by five members of the Supreme Court, where a vice president of CNN went up there to apologize for the coverage of Bush during the election and to assure him that they would do everything they could to portray him favorably in the media. This sucking up, because in 1987, Ronald Reagan did away with many of the provisions of what is broadly referred to as the Fairness Doctrine, including one that said that programming must serve the public interest. And the way that was interpreted was that news had to be news. And so radio stations wanting to renew their licenses every year, television stations wanting to renew their licenses to use the public airwaves every year, and I would submit to you cable, you know, which uses the public rights of way to move to have their cables. Cable has not so much been interpreted in this context. I think it should be, frankly. But radio and television stations, in order to be able to demonstrate every year when their licenses were up for renewal that they had been serving the public interest, the main way they did it, it wasn't with the swap meet or the PSAs, you know, the public service. That wasn't it. The way they did it was by providing news at the top of every hour. And so the networks, the big networks, understood that if they, you know, if their stations had to do this, they had to have a good evening news show. And on radio, they had to have good news at the top of the hour and had to be actual news. So Reagan blows that away, that requirement, in 87. And then Clinton just puts a complete nail in that coffin with the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And the effect of these two things has been that there is no longer an obligation to present news. In fact, Fox even was sued by two reporters down in Florida who were told, the local Fox television station's news department told them that they, Jane Aker and Steve Wilson, told them that they had to lie on the air about the effects of a genetically modified hormone on people. They rewrote their story almost 40 times and finally reached a point where they said, no, we're not willing to lie on the air. And they were fired. And they pursued a wrongful firing lawsuit in the courts in Florida. And a jury of local men and women unanimously ruled that they had been fired inappropriately, and that they deserve several hundred thousand dollars in back compensation and punitive damages. And Fox took that to the federal appeals court, and won. The appeals court, the federal court, you know, with these right wing judges on it, said, oh, you know, media has a right to lie, and they have the right to force their employees to lie. And if those employees don't want to lie to the people, then they can be fired. And that's where it stands right now. And God bless Dan Rather for standing up and speaking out, because I think that and the last question that was asked yesterday when George Bush was doing his little song and dances news conference, where Super Stretch is this guy's nickname, Bill Salmon. His biography for speaking engagements. This is on his page where, you know, this is a reporter who says, 6'7" Bill Salmon, nicknamed Super Stretch by President Bush, enjoys more access to the commander-in-chief than any other journalist. Salmon has spent hours with Bush in the Oval Office aboard Air Force One, even in the president's sprawling Texas ranch. As senior White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner, Bill Salmon travels with Bush wherever he goes and was with him on 9/11 when his presidency was utterly transformed by the terrorist attacks. So here Bush is closing up his news conference, and he reaches out to this guy that he knows is going to throw him a softball, and he may well have even known in advance what the question was going to be, so he can take a swipe at the so-called Democrat Party. Of course, there ain't no such thing. This is a slur that Joe McCarthy used for a while and then was roundly seen by everybody as a slur and went out of favor and was brought back by Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz. Hey, it sounds sort of like rat, doesn't it? Democrat Party? It's not. It's the Democratic Party. That's the name Thomas Jefferson gave it. It was the Democratic Republican Party from when it was founded in the 1780s, and then they dropped the word Republican from their name in the late 1820s, early 1830s, and it's been the Democratic Party ever since. The oldest political party in the history of the world. And the President of the United States doesn't know the name of one of the two major parties? This is pathetic. But beyond that, it seems to me that there is something to be said for this allegation that Dan Rather's making, that the press and big, what he describes as big government, I would say the corporatists in government, the non-Nazi fascists in government. Again, we were talking to Naomi Klein yesterday. We lack a word for this. The Europeans refer to it as neoliberalism, but that doesn't, you know, most Americans don't know what that means. It's the economic policies and that we were just talking with Ravi Batra about, the political policies leading directly to this, to the Republicans saying, okay, let's play politics with this now. We got Bush on TV bashing the Democrat Party. I mean, the war has begun, right? You got Bush out there on TV doing this thing, and then they bring forward this vote. Now, they couldn't pass the Levin Reed Amendment. This thing failed 47 to 47. Jack Reed and Carl Levin require the withdrawal of U.S. forces to begin in 90 days and end in 9 months. They couldn't get that through. They couldn't get habeas corpus back. They couldn't get, but they could muster 72 votes, including 20-some-odd Democrats, terrified, pathetic Democrats, to vote to say, oh, we're going to condemn MoveOn.org for saying that General Petraeus has been politicized by the Bush administration and has gone along with it, when there actually is a long record going back 4 years of General Petraeus over and over and over again and being rewarded with another star and then another star of being political, of taking political positions in ways that no military man should, and that many military men have resigned rather than do. So anyhow, after the break, I will share with you the names of the Democrats who wimped out on us. And then we'll take your calls. Anything goes Friday, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, participate in the blog, participate in our message board, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartmann Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Ah, yes, anything goes. Friday, 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 1-866-303-2270. Our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room and say hi. Some strange stuff going on out there in the world, by the way. Yeah, maybe. Shirley, New York. There was a car wash advertising topless car wash. Whole bunch of guys got in line. Yeah, we'll pay $5 for topless car wash. They were a little upset when they discovered that the people washing the cars who were topless were men. They didn't hit the jackpot. On the other hand, here's this guy, he's having sex in the bathroom with Lindsay Lohan, and he's married to a billionaire. On the other hand, it's like, boy, what a weird juxtaposition. It's like winning both lotteries or losing both lotteries. I don't know. It's just, Totally, totally strange stuff in the news out there. Anyhow, let's get back into the world of normalcy here. Jane in San Diego, California. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much, Tom. I learn so much every day from your program. I am incensed. And, you know, each day we hear about our democracy going and going and going. And I really feel a hacksaw was taken to it last evening. And I hope I can get people out there who are sitting on their duffs to do something and call the AARP. I don't know if people are aware, last evening the Iowa debates were carried also, I mean, great KPBS for carrying it, and Dennis Kucinich wasn't there, and I guess, you know, the a couple of the others. And I'm looking and I'm thinking, well, he must be sick or something. And so I call up my local TV station and find out that he wrote a letter, which I suspected was the case anyway. He was the only one that really talked about the health care and how the insurance companies were doing us in and what AARP tried to do when they tried to get everybody to feel good about this Part D prescription drug thing, which they were making out heads and tails over. And so here they prohibited our Democratic person from us hearing him by prohibiting him to be on the stage.
So Kucinich was not invited to participate in the AARP-sponsored debate?
No.
You're sure of that?
I'm positive, and he wrote an
that's,
open letter.
That's amazing. Now, and I've said on this program a number of times, I mean, I canceled my AARP membership some time ago because you figure out AARP is, just like the NRA, is basically a gun manufacturing lobbying firm. I mean, it's a trade organization. AARP is an insurance company. They make their money. Actually, they partner with, I think it's United Healthcare, the company that paid William McGuire, its CEO, $1.7 billion. They partner with this company to offer health insurance, but basically AARP makes their money selling insurance, and most of it health insurance. And so if they're making their money selling insurance, they're not going to be real interested in single payer health care plans like Dennis Kucinich has been a champion for. Amazing. Anthony in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Anthony, welcome to the program.
Oh my goodness, Tom, your program this morning, I just don't know where to begin. I'm the lady that was just before me. I watched the same thing last night, and so many red flags. It's like you didn't have Barack Obama there, and so
now, he was not there because he was not invited. Though he claimed that he had a schedule problem, and I'm assuming that that's the case.
But the thing is that Judy Woodruff from CNN moderated it, and it's like basically she put a question to all the candidates, and she said, in order to save Social Security, would you, because currently I guess we don't tax people making over $200,000 with a Social Security tax?
It's about $90,000 right now. If you make more than $90,000, you don't pay Social Security taxes above that point.
And she said, yes or no, would you tax people making over whatever the Social Security tax? And all of them said yes, except for Hillary. She said she would not. And just two other things. I your previous guest, it was like, it's so refreshing to hear someone explode this myth. I don't know how this myth exists that Republicans are so fiscally responsible.
Tell you how it exists. It exists because hundreds of millions, perhaps probably billions of dollars have been spent on think tanks starting back in the 1960s. I mean, neoliberalism, which is the official name for this ideology, came out of the Chicago School, Milton Friedman in the 1950s. This is what we were talking with Naomi Klein about yesterday. David Harvey also has written a brilliant book called A Short History of Neoliberalism that really summarizes it, because these guys organized and paid for and funded these think tanks to change the minds of the American public. It goes back to Lewis Powell's memo to the National Chamber of Commerce saying business needs to get involved in politics. And at that time, there were fewer than 200 lobbyists in the United States. Now you have over 30,000.
Well, just the other night I was watching CNN, and they said that apparently we've maxed out our credit card and we have to raise the debt ceiling again.
That's right. It was just raised earlier this week or maybe late last week. I don't recall which date, up to $10 trillion.
And finally,
that's right. We've
And finally, with regard to this Greenspan pimping his book, basically he failed to regulate the hedge funds, which caused this subprime lending debacle that we are
right. And as Robbie Badra pointed out, they had to do that because they were doing the supply side economics and it wasn't working, and the economy was going to go in the tank, and so they wanted to hype it a little harder, a little farther, and so we were the ones who were the recipients of their most recent Ponzi scheme. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, however you spell it, will get you there, and AirAmerica.com for our blog, and drop into our live chat room. Peter in Jersey City, New Jersey, listening on WWRL. Hey, Peter, you have a correction for the Kucinich information.
Right, the first caller misrepresented what happened. They invited every candidate that has an active campaign office and at least one paid staffer in Iowa. So if Kucinich isn't campaigning in Iowa, he wasn't invited to an Iowa debate. And they all accepted except for Obama.
I see. So, that's interesting. Okay. Thank you very much for the clarification, Peter. I appreciate that. Diana in Santa Rosa Beach, was that Florida?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Diana.
Hi. You're wonderful, as usual. But, you know, the MoveOn.org ad is... Well, I went to the Thursday night throwdown last night when my industry gets together, and I'm usually the only Democrat there. And they were very upset last night at the resolution, especially when it was accompanied with the Webb Amendment, which was turned down, which they voted against our troops. They voted for some silly resolution. One guy started singing Louie Louie, if you understand the reference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is why Congress has an 11% approval rating. It's amazing. I talked to Democratic members of Congress. I've talked to a couple of the, quote, moderate Democratic members of Congress, very often off the air, and they'll say, gee, I don't understand why, you know, we've passed all this great legislation, you know, particularly members of the House of Representatives. Well, I don't understand why, you know, our approval rate. And I'm like, it's because you didn't end the damn war. It's like, because you're not standing up to George Bush. It's because you're not fighting back. People want, you know, they want the Democrats to get a spine. They want the Democrats to fight back and to have 22 Democrats go along with the Republicans on a political stunt. Is frankly pathetic. And Diana, thank you so much for pointing it out and raising the issue. Tim in Castor Valley, California, listening on KGRN. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Ted?
Tim?
Ted?
Is it Ted? I'm sorry. You're on the air. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I called when Robbie was there. But I wonder, since you know him so well, if you have a couple of answers. He mentioned the crash of housing prices.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten from him when he expects that to start?
It's already started.
Well, yeah. Okay. Fine.
It's already underway.
I understand that. Okay. When does how? Look, I had a house. I have a house that was worth say $558, say a year and a half ago. How low does he think a house that was worth that? How low will it go? And is he ever?
Yeah, I can't speak for Robbie Batra, and what he's said is fairly general. And I recommend his books, by the way, to you. Alan Greenspan says he's expecting a low double digit, high single digit, low double digit, in other words, 10, 11, 12% overall decline in the value of homes. Now, what you're going to see is in some communities, for example, here in Portland, Oregon, where we have a very liberal city where there's a lot of city planning and there's these greenways, there's lots of open areas and there's lots of parks and frankly it limits housing, it limits the amount of development. Development is very, very tightly regulated in this city. As a consequence of that, the value of houses are not crashing, they're just going up more slowly. Whereas
you would
in
go
other
to
places,
a good environment like that.
Yeah, I know. It's
a guy like you, you know, doggone you, Tom.
But in other areas where, you know, the developers have just gone hog wild and particularly where they've been building McMansions, you know, houses that are generally larger than people need and just status housing and things.
Right.
What you're going to see, I mean, you saw the same thing in the 1920s in the United States, and that's why in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, there are all of these big old houses that got converted into rental properties, and in many cases, you know, you could rent a story, you know, a floor of a house or a room in a house. And I mean, it's still the case in cities all over America that there's rental properties that used to be single family homes. And frankly, that's my prediction, is what's going to come around is that you're going to see a lot of these McMansions remade. You're going to see a whole, you know, housing change thing remade into duplexes or triplex kind of rental properties as people move out of homes and into rentals. But as to what the value of an individual house is going to do, Ted, it's really going to depend on the area, and there's going to be parts of the country. There already are parts of the country that are being hit really bad, and there's also local economies. Like Michael Moore's Roger and Me movie back, you know, in the 70s, I think it was, about Roger Smith, the president of GM, when he moved five factories out of Flint, Michigan, down to Mexico, and how it wiped out Flint, Michigan, and what it did to the housing price. I mean, that was just a local thing, although it was tied again to the same cycle, that 30-year cycle that Robbie Botcher's talking about. So. Anyhow, it's a good time to batten down the hatches. It's not a good time I don't think we need to panic here, but it's a good time to batten down the hatches and to keep safe and stable what you've got that's safe and stable. Julie in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Tom, I just, you know, the Republicans under George Bush don't seem to be able to enunciate well, so they don't seem to be able to say Democratic. So I figure if they're dropping a syllable, we ought to drop a syllable and teach them a lesson. Start calling them the Publican Party.
There you go, the Publicans, yeah.
And
yeah,
well,
absolutely. Or, yeah, and it could be taken one of two ways, either those who hang out in the pubs a lot or the Publicans in the old biblical sense. Yeah, good one. Thank you, Julie. Paul in Renton, Washington. Hey, Paul.
Hi. I was wondering about the filibuster. And I was wondering if, like, a bill that, let's say, Bernie or Senator Dodd had something against it, rather than vote against it, why don't they just filibuster it?
They could. The problem is that the Republicans have not been bringing forth legislation that's so horrible that the Democrats would want to stop it. The Democrats, because they control the Senate, have been bringing forth legislation that the Republicans want to stop. And the Republicans have been doing so by saying, okay, we're going to declare a filibuster. And and Harry Reid's the guy, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, Harry Reid's the guy, although this would be a collaborative effort, I'm assuming, by the leadership, the Democratic leadership of the Senate, but he's the guy who would decide whether they're going to use the more modern, the last two decades, more or less, rules of saying, okay, you guys are going to call for a filibuster. Do we have 60 votes to invoke cloture to end debate? We don't. Okay, that's the end of it. Versus going back to the old days when you had senators who would stand on the floor for 10, 20, 30 hours talking nonstop or taking turns talking nonstop in order to tie up the Senate to prevent something, you know, the way a filibuster was done for 100 years or 150 years. And frankly, I think that what that does is that demonstrates to the world what the Republicans are really doing, which is they're being obstructionists. And so I think it's really vital, frankly, that the Democrats bring back the filibuster, essentially. Say to the Republicans, okay, you guys, you want to talk, you know, you don't want to end debate on this? Great. We're not going to end debate on it. Keep talking. And they should have started this, the big one, they should have started this with the free choice, the Employee Free Choice Act, the, you know, card check. But there have been so many, I mean, habeas corpus, you're not willing to fight for this? This is why the Congress, the Republicans and Democrats, have such a lousy rating, is because there's a general perception among the American people that they don't have a spine. And what we need to tell these guys, instead of beating them up and kicking them upside the head and talking about impeaching Nancy Pelosi and crazy stuff like that, is we need to say to them, I shouldn't call it crazy stuff, but you get the point. What we need to say to them is, we're with you. Don't be afraid. Don't behave like cowards. Don't be afraid. We are with you. Stand up to these bullies. John in Westlake Village, California. Hey, John.
Hi, Tom. I love your passion and your depth of knowledge. I'm the guy that sent you a couple months ago a copy of an article from The Economist about transfer pricing, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the 60% of it being between subsidiaries of multinationals.
Right. Right.
I'd love to hear Ravi Batra's viewpoint about that. But what I'm calling about today, the American interest called Breaking the Bank, about how we're spending so much money on defense and our capabilities going down, our expenditures are going up. You and your readers should read it. Really, if we could ever straighten that out, it would be a big plus for the country. The other thing,
half $1 trillion, you know, the annual defense budget of this country, it's larger than the defense budgets of every other country on Earth combined.
And if you read this,
tell me that makes sense.
It's going down the drain because it's not really, improving our defenses at all. Actually, they're getting worse.
Well, and not only that, here's the other really important thing, John, and thank you for making the point about defense spending. When you spend federal tax dollars, when you spend money on bridges or roads or schools or hospitals, the traditional infrastructure things, post offices, those produce ongoing revenue for decades, sometimes for centuries. I mean, we've got bridges from the 19th century, the Brooklyn Bridge still out there. It's still generating revenue. It's still enhancing commerce. When you spend money on defense, when you build a bomb, you drop that bomb on somebody, the money's gone. You spend money on bullets, you shoot those bullets, that money's gone. And so money spent on defense has the effect of, over the short term, stimulating the economy because you hire people to make those bombs and bullets. But after that, there's no ongoing stimulative effect. And this is why it's insane that for 26 years now, ever since Reagan basically put us on a hyper-war footing, that we have had an economy that depends on the defense industry in order to survive. 45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And, the report is out. Geophysical Research Letters, Scientific Journal, September 25th issue. A large team of scientists, a whole large bunch of scientists, I don't know how to say it beyond that, have gotten together and posted this letter to Geophysical Research Letters, GRL. Saying that if we don't stop pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, that because the oceans are absorbing it, the oceans are going to become so acidic that not only will they violate EPA standards for water quality, but many of the things that live in the ocean will die. I mean, this is serious stuff. You got a bunch of flipped out scientists. Most of the research points to the future when, in the absence of major efforts to curb carbon dioxide emissions, there will be double the atmospheric concentration, 760 parts per million, by century's end. By contrast, at the beginning of the last century, it was 280 parts per million. Right now, we're in the range of 500 parts per million. Wendy Wang is with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Wendy, what's going on in Washington, D.C.?
This morning, the Senate rejected a bill that would mandate withdrawal of troops in about 9 months. This bill was sponsored by Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, and the vote failed by 44 to 44. or excuse me, 47-47, getting my numbers wrong here. And of course they needed 60 votes in order to end debate. And, we're hearing a lot of grumbling on both sides, especially when the Senate, yesterday in the late afternoon decided that they were going to vote on a motion to condemn the MoveOn.org, ad against General Petraeus, 72-24. And a lot of us in the media are wondering just where the Senate's priority is, this Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us are wondering as well. And, you know, we should tip our hat to the Democrats who voted no on this thing. You know, Akaka, Bingaman, Boxer, Brown, Byrd, Clinton, Dodd, Durbin, Feingold, Harkin. These are the good guys. These are the ones who voted no on the move on. Harkin, Inouye, Kennedy, Kerry, Lautenberg, Levin, Menendez, Murray, Reed, Rockefeller, Sanders, Schumer, Stabenow, Whitehouse, and Wyden. Those are the good guys who voted no on this move on. But you have, more than 20, I think it's 22 Democrats who voted yes on the thing. They're just, the terrified, spineless wimps. It's like, come on, guys, get a spine! Excuse me.
Exactly. And Senator Obama, of course, abstained from that vote, and he later on went on to say that it's kind of a shameless tactic for, the White House to be calling for any kind of combination and,
Joe Biden didn't vote on it either.
What bothers most people, that the Senate gave in and took the time out of their busy day instead of voting on debating on the S-CHIP bill that the president is threatening to veto, and said they took time out to actually put a vote on the MoveOn.org ad.
Which means that Harry Reid allowed this to happen.
You know,
because doesn't he control the Senate agenda?
Exactly. That the Democrats are in the majority, so they allowed for this to move forward. Even though they do hold on to a very slim majority, it is up to the Democrats to set the meeting agenda, and for them to do so is kind of wonders for a lot of us.
Yeah, to say the very least. Although Harry Reid voted against it, but he could have just said, I'm not going to let this thing come to the floor. I think he could have said that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think he could have said that. So, anyhow, what else is going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, you know, yesterday I want to call your attention to an investigation that is going to be taking place through the Pentagon. Pentagon investigators are conducting somewhat of a criminal, actually, it's not somewhat, it is actually a criminal review of about $6 billion of contracts that are going on in Iraq. They're saying that there's a lot of crooked contractors who are taking taxpayer dollars, and $6 billion are under investigation of how it went out and who got the money, and the kind of kickbacks and bid rigging and bribery that took place with this money. So Pentagon is launching a full investigation on these contracts.
Yeah, and somewhere somebody is doing, I think it was Claude Rains, you know, doing an imitation. What? Gambling in Casablanca? I'm shocked! Shocked!
That's right.
It's not like, you know, for 5 years we haven't seen this. I mean, they shipped, you know, there's some $8 billion in cash over there that's gone missing. The amount was in that neighborhood.
This money was supposed to go to American troops in Kuwait, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and it included food, water, and shelter. So imagine all this supplies just going up in the air, poof, gone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guarantee it didn't go up in the air, poof. It went in somebody's pocket.
Somebody's
probably
pocket,
got, you know,
right.
Folks like Ahmed Chalabi and company. There's some, and not to mention a few, I'm sure that there's a few American hands in that pot as well. So it's good on them for investigating it, though, finally.
Finally, yes, exactly. The war started in 2002, and now it's 2007. So now, after losing $6 billion, we are investigating this because, you know, after $1 billion lost, we didn't deem it worthy enough of an investigation. So at $6 billion, yes, we are definitely going to step in and investigate where the money went.
Yeah, yeah. What else is up?
You know, the White House is actually thinking about talking to leaders of the U.N. Security Council, the permanent members of the U.N. Security Council, and launching more sanctions against Iran. You all know that Ahmadinejad will be appearing before the U.N. He's arriving in the U.S. on Sunday and appearing before the U.N. on Monday, this coming Monday.
Yeah. So now, the flip side of this is something that I think most Americans are completely unaware of. There's a big article about it in the Financial Times of London today about Khatami, who is a moderate. and he's considering running for president, and he's pulling together forces to take on basically the loonies, you know, and
right.
Ahmadinejad and company. And this guy actually has a very good chance. There's a strong moderate movement in Iran that wants to bring Iran kind of back off the edge.
Yeah.
And the one thing that would blow it up is if we start dropping bombs on them. And it's like there's a moderate movement about to break out in Iran, and we're sabotaging them with all this Axis of Evil stuff and all this saber rattling.
Move ahead of that diplomatic effort so that we can drop a couple of bombs. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's terrible. Wendy Wang, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Wendy.
Have a great weekend, Tom.
Thank you. You too. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone on Air America Radio. Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Boy, is it getting strange out there. I mean, downright weird. This hot news from today's Finnish newspapers, courtesy of Jacob, a listener of ours in Oulu, Finland. He says a U.S. family has applied for refugee status in Finland. The family consists of a husband, wife, and three small children. The foreign ministry is Finnish foreign ministry is handling the case. However, since the family came through Germany, as per the Dublin Agreement, they may be returned to Germany, the first point of touchdown in Europe. Also, he notes the new Finnish government, a coalition of right and center with the support of the Greens, seems to be wooing the neocons, and they may say that America is considered a safe country and thus return the family to the U.S. Americans are now seeking political refugee status around the world. I guess we shouldn't be surprised. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone. Actually, it's a tragedy. I mean, it's funny, it's not funny. This is what it's come to. And what happened to the land of the free and the home of the brave? It is so time for us to stand up and speak out in favor of American values and say, we are not afraid. We are building a democracy. We do respect human rights. We do believe in habeas corpus going back to 1215, the right of a person not to be thrown into jail unless they're actually charged with a crime and there's some evidence that can be demonstrated in a court in front of their peers to demonstrate that they may be guilty of the crime before they're tried. And then ultimately to have the trial. I mean, this stuff is enshrined in our Constitution. And yet we have an administration and some Democrats going along with it as well who are just saying, it's not so important. Not so important. I think it's real important. And I think most Americans believe it's real important. This is not a Republican or Democrat left or right thing. This is an American thing. There's a lot of Americans very concerned about this. Kate in Arcata, California. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I have two points to make, and I think also that you're helping us to find the thread that we need to hold on to that's going through all of our history. First of all, I'd like to suggest that instead of calling the name for conservative, you've been, you know, trying to figure out something different. I would call this authoritarian corporate rule.
Yeah, or authoritarian corporatism.
Yes.
To use Naomi Klein.
To describe.
Yeah. I think that's a good one, and I'm going to be playing with that more as time goes on.
It really describes a lot, because this ideology has really been the enemy of democracy since the beginning. You see it with Alexander Hamilton and the people running through our whole history.
Right. Well, and not only that, China proves that authoritarian corporatism and democracy don't necessarily require each other. You have an absolutely authoritarian communist, essentially dictatorship, that is probably right now the most prosperous and vigorous free market economy in the United States, in the world.
Yes. Ravi Batra called it, just when he just talked to him, the rule of money. And
yeah.
That made me think that I remember in the 60s, that they weren't just about, the whole flower power, make love, not war. That wasn't just about resistance to the Vietnam War. It was, for me, and what I think it was, what was also going on was an instinctive resistance by a well-educated youth against, quote, big business. I remember.
Yeah, it was the resistance to the machine, Kate, and very, very well said. In fact, if you go back to the Port Huron Statement, which Tom Hayden was largely the author of the Students for Democratic Society that essentially started SDS. SDS was not started as an anti-war movement. It was started as a peace and justice, a social justice movement. And then it picked up the anti-war banner. So you're absolutely right. Mark in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I want to thank you also for getting me active. I was at the FCC media consolidation hearings yesterday in Chicago at Operation Push, and it was fascinating.
What happened?
Well, first of all, I'm a novice at media, and I decided to go and testify. And I didn't know what to expect, so I got at Operation Push at 9:30 in the morning, finally got to testify at about 9:15 in the evening. But
wow.
The proceedings and the panel discussions on big media consolidation were amazing. And before I go further, I want to...
Now, let me just, Mark, was this Jesse Jackson's Operation Push putting this thing on, or was this the FCC?
No, they were hosting it. They hosted the forum.
But were there commissioners from the FCC there as well, or was this a discussion outside?
Everybody from the FCC was there. All the five commissioners.
Wow.
What was interesting, and I encourage everybody to go to stopbigmedia.com for more information and to get active, but the important thing here, Tom, is we had the commission, and we had panels of people, and the discussion had to do with media ownership. Now, novices like me don't have any idea of the industry. We're not insiders. You know all about the issues. I can go over, there was 7 hours of testimony and panel, so I just kind of edit a few things, and, you know, maybe I could call and leave some names for you later on.
Yeah, no, we do this as a topic from time to time, Mark. We don't, and right now I've got a whole board full of callers who want to get to make
a
point.
I've got three important things that I found fascinating.
Okay, very quickly,
NBC purchased Telemundo, and the reporters on Telemundo have to do their feeds in both Spanish and English so that I believe NBC can use them on their main streams as well. I thought that was pretty interesting. And, of course, the hip-hop industry are up in arms about the portrayal of big media and only playing the nasty nasty stuff. But I would suggest to you there are two great guys on the commission. We don't talk about government in a positive way. Michael Copps is phenomenal.
Yep.
And he's a hero. And so is John Edelstein. And I wanted to mention them because...
Yeah, the two Democrats, by the way.
Well,
there is two Democrats and three Republicans.
They're particularly courageous in that
yeah,
group.
Yeah, they are. And they're outspoken and they're good guys. And there's a lot of very, very good work on this and a lot of very good writing on it. And it's a topic we'll revisit in a future show. Jay in San Diego. Thanks for the call, though. Jay, and thanks for getting active. Jay in San Diego, California. Hey, Jay.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the move-on issue again. I was just going to say I submitted a long message through Senator Feinstein's website. I told her I was very disappointed in her vote to support the Cornyn Amendment that indirectly attacked move-on. But at the same time, I did praise her support for the Levin Amendment on habeas corpus and the Webb Amendment to provide the longer rest periods for troops.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
What I ultimately said is that this month I'm going to be donating to Move On as a consequence of that vote instead of to the DSCC, and challenged her that the next big issue coming up is this FISA debate. And I was unfortunately she voted for that terrible FISA law that was passed back in the spring, and I said, when this comes up again, stand strong. You know, don't let them steamroll us. Don't let them misdirect America. And I will stand with you, and millions of other voters and Americans will stand with you, too, because if you keep basically playing for time through the 2008 election cycle, hoping for better times, it's not going to serve the interests of the Democratic Party or America, because it makes us look weak and unsure and lacking consistent ideology.
Well, and not just look. I mean, it actually does make us weak. Yeah, no, excellent point, Jay, and well done. And I find it very interesting. The Barbara Boxer voted against the trashing of MoveOn.org, and Dianne Feinstein voted for it, a split in the California delegation. Fascinating. Steve in Albany, New York. Hey, Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Don. Steve here. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call in because you were just talking about standing up and speaking out. And there's actually an event on September 29th in Syracuse where active duty soldiers from, I believe, the first Iraq Veterans Against the War group that have active duty members from Fort Drum have initiated a peace march that will be happening in Syracuse.
Wow, that's a huge risk, isn't it? I mean, as an active duty soldier, aren't you prohibited from doing that sort of thing?
I don't know the details on what the active duty soldiers can and can't do, but there is a group of them from Fort Drum who contacted the Syracuse Peace Council to help put this program together. And and literally peace groups all across upstate New York, from Rochester to Albany to New York.
Steve, we're going to hit a break in just a couple of seconds. Is there a website or anything for this, for if people want to know more about it in New York?
Yeah, neighbors4peace.org and syracusepeacecouncil.net.
syracusepeacecouncil.net. Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for the heads up. Appreciate it. 16 minutes past the hour. Our phone number, 866-303-2270. Drop into our live chat room over at tomhartmann.com. It's right up at the top of the page. Or our blog over at airamerica.com. We'll be right back.
Is the Tom Hartmann Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Anything Goes Friday, 21 minutes past the hour. Apparently for Glenn Beck, anything goes. Yesterday he was attacking Jesse Jackson for allegedly suggesting that Barack Obama was behaving white, or words to that effect, saying that this is an incredibly racist thing to say, for that Jackson was a racist, right? That Glenn Beck, oh, he would never say anything like that.
Really, for me, it just kind of goes off the tracks. You've got Jesse Jackson, the week that he says Barack Obama is acting white, which is an unbelievable racist statement. I mean, if I said, I don't know, I don't think I can vote for that Rudy Giuliani because he's acting a little black, he'd be picking
in front of
my building tonight.
So now that's Glenn Beck last night. Now, in the past.
But you can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white?
That was Glenn Beck on February 12th, 2007.
He's very white.
Yeah, so he says it on the radio, it's no problem. But if Jesse Jackson says it, that makes Jesse Jackson a racist. Oh, man. And why are we even having this discussion? I mean, we should be talking about the issues. What's his health care plan? What's he going to do for America? How's he going to get us out of Iraq? Let's move on from this stuff. 1-866-303-2270. Leonard in Phoenix, Arizona, KPHX. Hey, Leonard, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartmann, I just wanted to thank you
Air America and all the progressive networks here in this country. I'm an Iraq veteran. I'm just calling up to state that I'm outraged at the king yesterday stating that MoveOn.org, you know, by attacking General Petraeus and by doing so is attacking all my fellow soldiers in the military. He's a liar. I disrespect this person we call a president. He got out of the draft. He disrespects my fellow soldiers, and I'm calling to thank MoveOn.org and all of those people who speak up for my fellow soldiers who can't. A lot of times, I'm not saying they all agree with what I say and my fellow soldiers, but a large amount of us are tired of being the only ones who are sent over for 15-month tours being told this is a war and nobody else is contributing or helping in on this. We're just told to go shopping. So every time you hear George Bush attack MoveOn.org, just remember there's many soldiers like myself who are damn glad that they are out there publicly standing up for us, because a lot of us are afraid to speak up because these goons have done a lot of things to us, threatened our benefits and the rest of it. Thanks a lot, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you, Leonard. And one way to thank MoveOn.org, by the way, is by going over to MoveOn.org and send them $5 or $25 or whatever you can. Marge in Long Island. Hey, Marge.
Hi. Yeah, we just contributed to MoveOn last week, just because of that. I wanted to talk about Dan Rather, because I see, you know, at the heart of all these matters is getting the truth to the public, which is what I think he represents. And I wanted to get your take on the similarity in the General Smedley Butler story after he revealed the names of the conspirators that wanted to create a fascist country and install a dictator in 1934. Why, you know, the New York Times squashed the publication of the names of those people, and what you think America would look like today had it been common knowledge amongst, you know, in our history books as to how close we came to becoming a fascist country and who was responsible for that. I wonder if George H.W. Bush would have ever gotten office, and certainly if the current president would have ever gotten office as a result of the public knowledge of that conspiracy. What do you think?
I honestly don't know, Marge, but it's you know, one of those alternate histories that would be fascinating science fiction to write. Smedley Butler was a real hero, and he stood up and he spoke out. His book,
really,
War is a Racket.
Yeah,
his book, War is a Racket, is absolutely brilliant, and I appreciate your raising the topic. For those of you who don't know, there was a small group of industrialists, many names that you would immediately recognize, who had, through an intermediary, approached General Smedley Butler, who at the time was one of the most revered and famous retired generals, and said, why don't you pull together a bunch of military guys and let's overthrow Franklin Roosevelt. Let's have a coup here in the United States and install a good conservative government, because this guy has become a socialist. There's stuff like Social Security, you know, how dare he talk about this, the Wagner Act that allows people to have unions. I mean, this is socialism. We're going down the road toward communism. We've got to stop it. And Smedley Butler, rather than saying, fine, guys, I'll take your money, I'll do it, he blew the whistle on them. And most of America didn't even learn the story about this thing until 20 years later. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Taking over.
got the guns, but we've got the numbers. Welcome back to Mainstream Radio in America. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 35 minutes past the hour, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Rick in Woodland Hill, Woodland, Washington. I'm sorry, Rick. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Hey, listen, that MoveOn.org ad didn't do anything but cleverly ask a question for us to make up our own mind.
Yeah, no, they were not engaging in character assassination or asserting crimes on behalf of General Petraeus. They were asking the question. They did it in a very provocative fashion. And I would say that the net effect of this, I think, was positive. There, you know, the old P.T. Barnum, it doesn't matter what they say as long as they spell my name right. MoveOn.org has gotten an awful lot of publicity out of this. And hopefully over the long term it's going to be a good and positive thing. And frankly, I think it will be. I think that it's even, you know, the fact that the Senate decided to vote on something, even though you had 20-some-odd senators wimp out on it, Democratic senators, the fact that the Senate decided to vote on this shows that MoveOn.org and other political groups on the left, actually representing the mainstream of American opinion, people who say enough of this war already. This, you know, we elect the Democrats to end this war. Why hasn't it not ended? That those of us who are concerned about these issues, and frankly, as Keith Olbermann pointed out last night in his absolutely brilliant commentary on Countdown, his Countdown program, The blurring of this line between the military and the civilian. I mean, the policy should be made by civilians, and military policy should be defended by civilians. And as Olbermann pointed out correctly, you know, when MacArthur during the Korean War wanted to go in and invade China and started saying, this is what we should, and started lobbying for political action, for policy, Harry Truman said, okay, that's it. You're out of a job, Charlie. And Abraham Lincoln did the same thing with McClellan, and McClellan even came back and ran against him for president, nearly beat him. I mean, there's a long history of presidents saying to generals who tried to get political, sorry, you can't get political. That's not how it works in America. And here we have, for the first time, as far as I know, in the history of this country, a president asking a general to get political. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. The Petraeus was willing to go along with it, and it's a tragedy that George W. Bush put him up to it, and it's a terrible statement on the spiritual impoverishment, the small d democracy impoverishment of the Republican Party by and large, and a few Democrats who are going along with it that they would even countenance this. Celeste in Santa Monica, California. Hey, Celeste, what's on your mind today?
Hi, morning, Tom. You're a true pro wisdom in the vast sea of media. I'm glad to hear you.
Thank you.
So I am currently reading The New Golden Age, and I was thrilled to hear Robbie this morning. And he mentions in his book that when Wall Street sneezes, the rest of the world gets pneumonia. Do you believe that there is any other country or countries whose economy could stabilize our potential economic crash?
It's hard to say. The European Union has become a real force. You know, in aggregate, I think that there are about 70 or 80% of the U.S. economy. I don't recall the numbers, but it's really substantial now. And they're looking. There are countries that are, you know, that may be joining the EU. And when you add that to the British, the pound is still a separate currency from the euro, although euros can be used in England. But I think it's possible that Europe could be a stabilizer force. The problem is that neoliberalism, this conservative philosophy, this authoritarian corporatism, is spreading in Europe. Maggie Thatcher actually started this in 79 before Reagan came along in 81. And England has suffered through it and been harmed tremendously by it, frankly, as David Harvey brilliantly points out in his new book, Brief History of Neoliberalism. And now you have Sarkozy in France, who is doing the same thing. He's moving France in that direction, one of the very last countries to go in that direction. Apparently somebody got around to having French think tanks promoting these crazy ideas. And these neoliberal ideas, not liberal, neoliberal, is a whole different thing. It's what you'd refer to as Reaganism in the United States or authoritarian corporatism, is infecting, you know, Europe. It's infecting Asian economies. There are still a few that are holding out. Japan has been holding out, but hard to say, Celeste. I do think though that the interconnectedness of currency and the fact that so much money is now being made with money rather than being made the old-fashioned way by making products or providing services has put the entire world economy at tremendous risk. And beyond that, I got no crystal ball. And as you said, Ravi Batra is the guy who wrote the book, and he's got the guy with the PhD in economics. Thank you for the call, and great to hear from you. Richard in North Bergen, New Jersey. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. There's a couple things. I just was on the news, FoxNews.com. They're claiming that Bill O'Reilly has two Emmys to his credit.
Oh, really?
Yes, I went to the Emmy site, and they could not confirm that. Also, too.
Well, he used to say that he had Peabody's or Polk's, and it turned out he had the other. But, you know, I mean, I really think that Bill O'Reilly is kind of fading into obscurity right now.
Well,
it goes beyond wacko. I think he's in his declining days.
But there's something about men wearing uniform at political things. I have not been able to find anything in the UCMJ against it.
The uniform code of military justice. I believe you're right. On the other hand, once you join the military, you do surrender many of your constitutional rights, like the right to free speech.
I looked through the Title 10, which is the armed forces, and
right.
I haven't been able to find anything that says, no, you can't.
But you do have to do what your commanders say, and if your commanders say you cannot participate in this, then you get nailed.
And the last thing I wanted to mention was about lying to Congress. Whether you're under oath or not, it's under U.S. Code Title 18, Crimes and Criminal Procedures, Part 1, Crimes, and Chapter 47, Fraud and False Statements.
Yeah.
And it's under Section 1001, Statements or Entry.
No, you're absolutely right, Richard. You don't have to be put under oath to be prosecuted
for lying
to Congress.
No, that's what I'm saying. That covers it. It doesn't say if you're under oath.
Absolutely. And this is now is the time that Congress needs to go back to Mr. Gonzalez and some of these other folks that have been there and say, we'd like to talk to you about your testimony, please. Paul in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Oh, yes. Almost surprised me here. Yeah, I like very much your stirring defense of freedom of the press there. And I guess that kind of, I think that supports my concern here. I've noticed that the war on terror and the problems that we're drifting toward here seem to be based on that 9/11 incident in New York, and that there's a lot of skepticism about whether or not that happened the way they said it did. I don't believe that it did, and I think any thinking person who would look at the evidence would have some serious doubts here, but this isn't coming up in the news here, and I know you've made some efforts in that. I wonder if you could report to us or something about, I mean, I can understand why the government would not want to debate a losing cause there, but...
The fact of the matter is that there has not been a good, serious, in my opinion, a good, serious evaluation, study, report, investigation of what happened on 9/11. And frankly, I think that much of the discussion about whether or not, for example, there were explosives in Towers 1, 2, and 7 diverts attention. It's a justifiable and reasonable debate to have and discussion, and certainly should be explored. But it diverts a lot of attention away from what, in my opinion, is the larger issue, which is, why, for months leading up to 9/11, did George Bush, when he was repeatedly given warnings that this thing was coming down the road, stand down, basically? To, you know, why, when Richard Clark was running around with his hair on fire, is the Bush and Cheney saying, "Oh, don't worry about it"? And I would say that one of the reasons why is because it was the greatest gift that they ever had. So. Anyhow, Ted in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ted, welcome to the program. Ted, you got to be listening to your phone, not your radio. Brad in Beverly Hills. We've got about a minute before we got to take a break here. Brad, what's up?
This is Brian. I have a few comments, and I'd like to ask you a hypothetical question. First of all, I would like to comment on the MoveOn thing because I'm a supporter of Air America and MoveOn, but I would like to know why Air America hasn't fallen under the same scrutiny. Because they say, wait, I mean, all you guys, and I love that you say it, but all of it is far more damaging than anything MoveOn does.
Yeah, or for that matter, why didn't Congress condemn the Swift Boat veterans?
Exactly. And also, I'd like to ask you a hypothetical question. How many Americans How many angry Americans would it take to overthrow the White House?
You mean in an election?
No, I'm talking about storming like millions of angry Americans.
I don't think that's the way to do it.
No, I don't think so either. It's just that, will we ever come to that?
Yeah, frankly, I don't think we will. Our military is too strong, and our police have become too militarized, and I don't think it would be a good thing anyway. We tried that back in the 1860s, and it was a disaster. What we need to do is get active at the grassroots level politically and take back one of the political parties, maybe two of them, and bring them back to rationality. 45 minutes past the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And thanks so much to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. Here's the MoveOn.org ad. This is what it says. The headline, General Petraeus or General Betrayus, cooking the books for the White House, is the subhead. And then the text of the ad says, very straightforward, General Petraeus is a military man constantly at war with the facts. In 2004, just before the election, he said there was, quote, tangible progress, end quote, in Iraq, and that, quote, Iraqi leaders are stepping forward, end quote. And last week, Petraeus, the architect of the escalation of troops in Iraq, said, quote, we say we have achieved progress, and we are obviously going to do everything we can to build on that progress, end quote. Every independent report on the ground situation in Iraq shows that the surge strategy has failed. Yet the general claims a reduction in violence. That's because, according to the New York Times, the Pentagon has adopted a bizarre formula for keeping tabs on violence. For example, deaths by car bombs don't count. The Washington Post reported that assassinations only count if you're shot in the back of the head, not the front of the head. According to the Associated Press, there have been more civilian deaths and more American soldier deaths in the past 3 months than in any other summer we've been there. We'll hear of neighborhoods where violence has decreased, but we won't hear that those neighborhoods have been ethnically cleansed. Most importantly, General Petraeus will not admit what everyone knows. Iraq is mired in an unwinnable religious civil war. We may hear of a plan to withdraw a few thousand American troops, but we won't hear what Americans are desperate to hear, a timetable for withdrawing all our troops. General Petraeus has actually said American troops will need to stay in Iraq for as long as 10 years. Therefore, today, before Congress and before the American people, General Petraeus is likely to become General Betrayus. Every single statement in that ad is factual. You know, when I said, why didn't Congress condemn the SWIFTBO veteran? I mean, that's not even an appropriate comparison, because the SWIFTBO ads were full of lies. This ad is absolutely, totally solid. There's not a single statement in there that can't be backed up. Go over to MoveOn.org and you can find all the links to all of the news stories that back up every statement made in that ad. It is not name calling. These are statements of fact. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you disagree. You think that MoveOn went too far.
Tom, I'm with you on this one, except for one thing. I don't think it was. It is fact. We know sorted it. It is fact. But
I'm sorry, Gary, your phone is breaking up. Can you say again what you said? I didn't understand it.
Can you hear me now?
No, it's I'm sorry. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. So you were saying. No, I guess we can't hear you now. Scott in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You also disagree. Hey, Scott, welcome.
Big time. Let me tell you, Tom, I'm 56 years old. I'm a totally disabled vet. I spent 1972 on my boot camp leave stuffing envelopes for George McGovern in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And let me tell you, if MoveOn.org wants to spend the next 14 months calling people like General Petraeus traitors. I got two words for you, President Thompson. Karl Rove is kicking himself in the butt because he didn't think of doing this a year ago and blaming it on MoveOn.org.
See, I don't think that most Americans are going to be as incensed as you think they are, Scott. I think the majority of Americans, I think, are very suspicious of General Petraeus, and they're very suspicious of his testimony. In fact, you look at the poll, the Pew poll that was taken the day after, and it did not change Americans' opinions of whether we should be in the war at all. Nobody believed what he had to say.
Every general, I don't care if they believe what he said or not, you're calling the man a traitor. Every general that has come out against this war, from Clark to Zahi, goes out of their way to say what a good general Petraeus is. And there ain't nothing that irritates me more than when some clown like Hannity sits there and downgrades us who are against the war and then says he's not questioning our patriotism. They are questioning this man's patriotism. I think General Oliver North, or Colonel Oliver North, is one of the biggest jerks in the country. But you start questioning his patriotism, I'm not with you no more.
So here's the point of the ad, and I think this is a really important one, and this is a good conversation, Scott. The point of the ad is that generals, that the military, should not be making policy and should not be defending policy. They should be making honest statements about what's going on the ground with regard to the military, but they should not be making policy. And there, again, if I encourage you to go over to MoveOn.org and look at all the news stories where Petraeus, let me just finish the sentence, where Petraeus has written op-eds, where he has written opinion pieces that have been published in major newspapers, and he has given interviews that are opinion pieces advocating policy. This is something that the military never does.
Okay, here's what I'm
saying. And he has done this. And so I'd say he has crossed the line. He has betrayed us.
Okay, well, that's my point. I agree with everything you said until you start calling a general in the Army a traitor. Then it don't matter.
I didn't use the word traitor.
I don't want to hear it.
Okay, I understand, Scott. I'm not calling him a traitor, but I am saying that it is a betrayal of his position, frankly, to be promoting policy.
I have a degree in marketing. And I actually have my theory on this. These people know what this is going to do. They're going to turn most people against them, but their supporters are going to send them money. Pat Robertson's a master at this. He says something ridiculous. Everybody says he's a moron, and his coffers fill up because the fringe...
Oh, yeah, that was the point I made earlier, is that this is going to be a good thing for MoveOn.org. The question that you're raising is this a good thing for the anti-war movement? And you think it's not, and I think it is, and time will tell which one of us is right. You may well be right. I don't know.
I don't want to continue this stuff, but I don't anybody call somebody a traitor, especially a military man. I'm not with them.
Yeah, okay. Scott, your point is well made, and I appreciate you making it. Thanks for the call. And thanks for being with us on the program today. Coming up Monday, I'll be challenging John Keller on his new book, The Bluest State, How Democrats Created the Massachusetts Blueprint for American Political Disaster. David Sirota is going to drop by, and we'll be taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.